You are Locked On Pirates, your daily podcast on the Pittsburgh Pirates, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Locked On Pirates, your Pittsburgh Pirates podcast of choice, I hope. My name is Jason Rolison. In addition to this podcast, you can see me on the pages of BucksDugout.com. And also, I make the occasional cameo over at PiratesBreakdown.com, where, you know, they really are still providing great analysis over there. It's for those who aren't familiar, it's a site that I founded back in 2015 after I ran RumBunter.com for about a year. And we kind of wanted to do our own thing, have a little more control over our content. And what we dedicated ourselves to from day one is just providing smart commentary that pushed the conversation around the Pirates forward. Not to keep it stagnant, not to just use the same old cliches and same old tired arguments about spending and all this crap. Just you know, honest to goodness baseball analysis. And even though I'm not so involved over there anymore, and I recently sold the site, I can't say enough about the team over there. Matt Shetler, David Slusser, some other guys who are keeping the flag going. So if you have some time, you can always find great work over at PiratesBreakdown.com as well as BucksDugout.com and this podcast. So here we are. It's Sunday night. The Pirates held on for a win today against the Padres. They've won two series in a row and are showing a little bit of life. It's no coincidence that today they flex their muscles well, hitting three home runs, solo shots from Dickerson and Elias Diaz, and a grand slam from Kyle Moran, his second of the year. And it's with Moran that I want to talk to begin this podcast. We're going to talk about Moran. We're going to talk about Elias Diaz, one of those guys hitting the home runs today, and a little bit about Mitch Keller as well. But for now, I want to start with Captain Redbeard himself. And yeah, like I said at the top, hit a second grand slam of the season today after sitting for two straight nights, one of which was against the left-hander. And unfortunately, it still seems as if Kyle Moran is pretty much an automatic sit against left-handed pitching. Now, I dove into this a little bit ago for Bucks Dugout, but just to give you the very brief 10,000-foot level overview of it, Moran splits in the minor leagues in his most recent full minor league season with the Houston Astros AAA organization. His splits against left-handed pitching were not what you would call mammoth. There was not a wide gulf between the splits, and the OPS, for example, I think was about only 65 or 70 points lower than his OPS against right-handers, and it was still above 700, which is, for me anyway, the bare minimum in any kind of hitter that I'm counting on to produce runs in my lineup. So the splits aren't as wide as you think they are, so I'm very much struggling to find out or to figure out in my head why Clint Hurdle sits him automatically against a left-hander. And I think it's come down to, you know, this might be a case where sabermetrics and deep analytics and playing the percentages are not the right thing to do. It becomes a philosophical argument for me. Do you sit the guy whose splits are a little lopsided against left-handers, or do you get him the reps so he can get better against left-handers? Any kind of hitter that is split-proof or platoon-proof is going to carry so much extra value than the guys who you have to just consider that with every single time they bring a left, the opposing team brings in a left-handed reliever or starts a left-hander. Granted, you don't see as many left-handers as you used to nowadays, especially for starting pitchers. But in my book, give me the reps, especially for this team who brought Kyle Moran over as part of the Garrett Cole trade. I think he, along with Musgrove, are the cornerstones of that trade. If they have to succeed at a decent level for that trade to be looked at by anyone as being a successful trade, or at least an even trade, or, you know, what have you. So this guy needs the reps, and he's not going to get better if he does not get them. So let me set the baseline for you with Moran. So this season alone, against left-handed pitching, he is striking out, let's be fair, about 8.6% more, 24.2% of the time. But he's walking at an 18.2% clip. Let's be very clear, very small sample size. I think we're talking something like 33 plate appearances versus left-handers as opposed to, let's see here, 254 for 221 against right-handed pitching. So, you know, 221 out of his 254 total plate appearances are going against righties, only 33 against lefties. So listen, there is definitely a small sample size to consider, and there is the fact that his OPS against left-handers this year is only 623. And a lot of that comes down to the slugging. Listen, I'll be honest with you. The slugging against right-hander for Kyle Moran is 438. It's 259 for left-handers. So, yeah, you can point to this as an easy argument for sticking to the platoon and saying, you know, look, this guy can't square up left-handed pitching as well. You might be right, but here's something interesting I found as well. If you look at his batted ball stats on Fangraphs, against left-handed pitching, again, small sample size, he's making hard contact against left-handers 21.1% of the time versus 33.7% of the time against right-handers. So, okay, you right there off the bat, you have your argument, right? Doesn't square with the ball, doesn't get as much very good contact against left-handed pitchers. Soft contact against left-handers, 21.1%. Against right-handers, 17.2%. So again, you know, 3.9%, you know, that's not as wide of a gulf, not as wide of a berth as the hard hit percentage, but look, it's substantial. But here's my point. Medium hit, you know, I've never understood how Fangraph says this. They have soft, medium, hard, so we'll just say medium contact. Medium contact against right-handed pitchers for Colin Moran, 49.1%, 57.9% against left-handed pitching. So my overall point is this. Yes, the splits are there. Yes, the splits in contact quality are there, but it's not as bad as you think. Maybe he's replacing some of that hard contact with medium contact. It stands to reason that that might improve with more reps. I hate to keep banging that drum, but that's, you know, kind of where I fall on this. Just a couple of other interesting notes on Moran versus left-handed pitching. WRC plus at Fangraphs has him at a 110 against right-handed pitching and 85 against left-handed pitching. So that is below average, but again, not as much of a split as you would think, right? So let's go to WOBA, weighted on base average. And I wanted to compare Moran against some other left-handed hitters against left-handed pitching who, you know, seem to have no trouble at all. And here's what I found. I'm going to take you the top three WOBA for left-handed hitters against left-handed pitchers with a minimum of 50 WOBA qualified events. Now, quick sidebar here. If you go to Fangraphs and look up the definition of WOBA, you see that it's at-bats plus walks minus intentional walks plus sacrifice hits divided by hits by pitch, or excuse me, plus hit by pitch. So that's what we're saying is a WOBA qualified event. So, you know, please refer to your manual at home. So Freddie Freeman, and I looked at this for a minimum of 50 WOBA qualified events, as I said. So Freddie Freeman, all-world talent, absolutely. 444 WOBA against left-handed pitchers. Max Muncy, the Dodgers rookie sensation. 444 against lefties, similar. A little bit of a lower sample size. I think he had, I don't have the number right in front of me, I think he had like 53 WOBA qualified events, whereas Freeman has somewhere in the 90s, so something to consider there. May not have had a chance to level off just yet. Scooter Jeanette, noted Pirates killer, 405 versus lefties in WOBA. So Colin Moran, for comparison, has just a 297 WOBA versus left-handed pitchers on 33 qualified WOBA events. If you look at expected WOBA, he jumps up to 357. So some of that medium contact is really not being reflected in his splits very well. So that's something to think about. Obviously, Colin Moran in his first full season in the major leagues is nowhere near the type of talent that Freddie Freeman is, and he's not particularly close to Jeanette either. I'll leave Muncy out of this just because of the great unknown of what he might do after he levels off a bit. But look, this guy is still, Moran that is still learning how to be an everyday big leaguer. But if I'm talking to Clint Hurdle, if I'm Neil Huntington, I want to see this guy get more reps against left-handed pitching. End of story. I think it really just needs to happen. What also needs to happen is that if you are a business owner or if you make a decision in a business, you know, we want to talk to you to talk about advertising on Locked On Pirates. We are a semi-daily podcast. We try to put out at least three per week. From that fact alone, your investment, which by the way, our rates are really good right now, your investment, your return on investment is pretty damn good considering you get more bang for your buck. So if you're interested, please, I encourage you to get at me on Twitter. DMs are open at jrollisonpgh. Or email me, jrollison, R-O-L-L-I-S-O-N, at gmail.com, and I'll get the ball rolling. Okay, so as we said earlier, the Pirates hit three home runs today, one of which was a solo home run from Elias Diaz. And this kind of they talked about on the broadcast today about how Jacob Stallings is on the 25-man roster, right? Just sitting there, you know, enjoying the ball game, and the Pirates have not necessarily had to go to him because Elias Diaz has simply held the fort down in Francisco Cervelli's absence in a big way. Now, when I say in a big way, I don't necessarily mean offensively. You know, Elias Diaz, he hit the home run today, but in the 8 games previous, he's had, you know, kind of a, you know, a meh kind of slash line, 250 batting average, 313 on base, 321 slugging on a BABIP of 269, so a little bit of bad luck. But he hasn't struck out during that time really well, very much. He's struck out 3 times going into today. Drew 2 walks, 4 RBI, you know, a couple of doubles. So I want to think back about how much we thought about Diaz and what we thought about Diaz even 2 years ago. And I really think that he is a poster boy, a case study, if you will, for pigeonholing prospects. So I was actually looking at MLB Pipeline's archives right before I started recording the podcast today, going back to 2016 when he last qualified as a legitimate prospect. I think he crossed that threshold last year. And the tools were, you know, not necessarily – the tool ratings, I should say, were not necessarily bullish on his offense. He was last rated with a 50-grade hit tool out of the 20-80 scale and a power tool of 40. And what a lot of prospect evaluators who are much smarter at prospects than me told me and told us at the time was that he has some power, but it's not going to be able to translate into game power. So you're looking at maybe low teens and home run totals and, you know, maybe a little bit of extra base power. And for the most part, that's borne out to be true. But also, I think it's also borne out to show that the guy's 50-rated hit tool might have been a little low. For the season, he's slashing 287, 336, 451, 5 home runs and 5 doubles. Had 14 doubles last year and the lone home run in 200 plate appearances. He's already got 134 this year, so he's maybe a little off track in you know the double power there, but than he was last year. But look, how can you not like what he's done so far in terms of holding down the fort for Cervelli? And I think everyone can agree now that he is ready to take over on a full-time basis. Defensively, we never had a problem with him. No one's ever had any qualms about his abilities there. But again, if you look at the batted ball, the quality of contact between the last couple of years and this year, we'll just stick to 2017. In 2017, Diaz made hard contact at 25.8% of the time. This year, up to 33.6. So just about an 8% increase in quality of contact and hard hit balls. Has kept remarkably the same, pretty much the same percentage of medium contact as well, 50.3 in 17, 50 in 2018. So that means soft contact has dropped about 7% from 23.8 to 16.4. So that alone tells me that here's a guy who is, you know, looking or has looked into why he didn't hit major league pitching very well last year and worked on it. And I think part of that is, you know, his built-in patience. Last year, during those 200 plate appearances, he only had a 9.8 swinging strike percentage. So he already had a very good foundation. One other little note about Diaz that I like this year a lot is that last year he saw first strike on the first pitch of the at-bat 59% of the time. That number has actually increased this year to 63.4%. So he is able to bounce back from at-bats, bounce back into at-bats a little better than last year. So when you pair that with good patience, another year of reps, and here's the reps we talk about, just like we talked with Moran. Maybe being a little more selective at the plate. His swing rates are down both in zone and out of zone and overall. But he's getting more productivity per swing. And I think that's a great progression for a guy who's now being counted on not only to be a regular backup, but take the ball and run with it when there's an injury to be had. So I think you really have to like what you're seeing in Elias Diaz. And I think if I'm the Pirates, I really, really explore Cervelli's trade value. Hopefully he can get off the DL sooner rather than later. Maybe put a couple of games together where he's showcasing his power, which hopefully is still there. And, you know, hit the block running and let Diaz take over. So for today's podcast, I'm going to get you guys out of here with a thought and a reminder. Mitch Keller went up to AAA Indianapolis this past week. Very well deserved. And one thing I really liked about how the Pirates handled Keller is that by bringing him up to Altoona, not quite at the midway point of last season, the 2017 season, but, you know, enough season left to really make it worth it, allowed him to get those innings in AA, then go through the Eastern League playoffs with the Altoona Curve, which they won, by the way. Eastern League champions, great team. Then he played in the Arizona Fall League and came back to AA this year. So when you think about that, you know, eight month stretch, he bundled in a lot of quality innings. Neil Huntington and his staff like to think of that all innings are not created equally. You hear a lot about stress innings and how they can be helpful to a pitcher's development or harmful. You hear a lot about the quality of innings. You know, if a pitcher's stuff is running really well in a 13-0 blowout, and they're just, you know, getting work in, you kind of wonder, you know, is this really a good stepping block for development, a good building block for development, if you can just go out there and just sling it without really thinking about it? So I kind of subscribe to that theory in a way. So it's, with all that being said, it's good to see the Pirates finally maybe follow the same path with AAA this year, sending him up to there with a good chunk of the season left. I think this is actually just about the halfway point, so even more than he had with Altoona last year. Well, he kind of got rocked in his debut. If you missed it, it was ugly, so don't even go look up the box score. It was bad. But don't get too concerned about that, because remember, Austin Meadows struggled mightily when he got to AAA last year as well. It might have been the year before, but he struggled mightily. And as much as Keller has shown, as much as we think of him as the one prospect who has the least risk about him, there's still that risk, and there's still those growing pains that have to be gone through. That's just how it is. There's no way around it. So do not get discouraged. See how he bounces back. See where he is at the end of the year. And see what he bundles in, maybe with a playoff run from Indy or perhaps another stint in the Arizona Fall League. And then start to get excited about 2019, because this kid is coming and he is going to be transformative to this Pirates rotation. That's all I have for you for this installment of Locked On Pirates. I thank you very much for listening. If you like our show, please subscribe if you haven't already. If you already subscribed, please leave a review. If you've left a review, please tell a friend. This is the way podcasts grow, and we hope to continue to provide these to you as we really enjoy doing so. So my name is Jason. You can find me on the pages of BucksDugout.com, and you can find me on Twitter at JRollisonPGH. Thanks. Have a good night.